Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Lincoln on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update providing up-to-the-minute information on interest rates, loan programs, and hot industry news relating to the mortgage industry. Brought to you by Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level. To participate in today's program, our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now, here is your host of Lincoln on Lending, David Lincoln.
Welcome, welcome, welcome. We'll kill the music there so I can get a conflict going. Anyway, so good to have you with us. It's Monday, April 20th. For those of you who are downloading and listening to this broadcast after the fact, again, this is the broadcast that's created by mortgage professionals for mortgage professionals, and we're the proud recipient of the Innovation Award but from Progress in Lending. Thank them very much for that. Great honor. Appreciate you making this a part of your regular way of getting updates on what's going on in the industry. And my, oh my, if you check the headlines today, there is a lot going on. Hopefully we'll get Paul Mowell back. He'll be back from vacation giving us an update here a little later in the broadcast. If not, we'll give you an update. We've got the regulars, Joe Farr on the line. We've got Alice Alvey. Prophet Doctor won't be able to be with us today. He's out and about making house calls, so Prophet Doctor will be missing. But we also have, of course, Sam Garcia. Lots of information today that we want to get into. I want to say a special thank you. Oh, by the way, our hot topic today is an update on housing. Very excited to have Lynn Fisher of the MBA, Dr. Lynn Fisher, with the MBA. Worked closely with Mike Frattantoni. And you go, well, yeah, but I thought Mike was going to come on the broadcast. Well, Mike was coming on the broadcast. He did, and I got an email from him yesterday. I stepped to the office for just a minute, got that email that goes, sorry, had a family emergency, but I've got someone even better. You can't wait to talk to Lynn. And so I've had a few visits with her, and I really am excited about this conversation. What's really interesting, Mike has all the topics and all the economic. He could talk about what's going on and how Grace interrelates to this thing. I really wanted to focus in on housing. And that was really the numbers. I'm looking at where, as you plan your business, as you plan the next quarter, the next 6 months, where's housing going? Because that's great. Greece, interest rates, fine. That's all fine. That's where I want to zero in. So we're very fortunate. It actually worked out quite well. We're going to have Lynn. She's on hold, and we'll have her on in just a little bit during the Hot Topic segment. So let's see. A special thank you goes out to our United Guaranty sponsor as well as Velma. United Guaranty is, again, just really the number one MI company for the fourth consecutive year in a row. I want to say congratulations to them. I just want to make sure they put out a press release this last week that wants to reassure everybody that they are going to be compliant with the private mortgage insurance eligibility requirement rules. It's PMIERS. As if we need another acronym, but we got one. And they will be compliant, effective December 31st, 2015. It's what the press release says. This was put out on the 17th. It's really important that we understand that this rule, and by the way, they are one of the GSE-approved mortgage insurers. I was with a client recently and going through the list of GSE-approved mortgage insurers. There's some that aren't on the list. Make sure you know who is and who isn't. It came as a bit of a surprise to my client, who was going to use them for some things, and to me. So check that list. Go check it out with Fannie Mae. It's on there. The most important part about the private mortgage insurance eligibility requirements, sorry, I forget that, caught my mouth, is that it's really important that they are going to be stable through this period of time and survive any economic stress. So they put themselves through some very stress tests, something we talk about regularly on this program. Every mortgage banker on their hedge position needs to look at the stress tests. And so they have done that, and they've gone through and have met all the requirements of the private mortgage insurance eligibility rules, requirement rules. It's a new deal that's out, I believe this one is from FHFA. This is where I believe this one originated, if I'm not mistaken. Or CFPB, who knows? There's so much coming out at us all the time. It's hard to stay on top. We'll have Alice Dubb give us an update on that. Anyway, also a special thank you goes to Velma. Very much appreciate them supporting our broadcast. Virtual Electronic Marketing Assistant, that's Velma. They do a great job of getting out our message to you each day and encourage you to use them as well. They're great folks, and you'll be happy you're working with them. Let's talk about upcoming conferences, MBA conferences, May 3rd through the 6th. We have the Legal Issues and the Regulatory Compliance Conference. That's at the Chicago Sheraton Hotel and Towers, and then also the one that I'm looking forward to. Hope to make this one. It's got a bunch of conflicts potential, but the May 17th through the 20th, the National Secretary of Marketing Conference and Expo in New York City at the New York Marriott Marquis. It's there each and every year. This one is going to be really, really important because of all that's going on. Mike Frattantoni will be giving a update on what his predictions and projections are for the market there, and so you'll definitely want to pick up on that. There's also just so much going on. New investors, are we going to see the private markets come back? So we'll get some more insights from that when we have Lynn on the broadcast just a little bit later. Joe Farr, good to have you here. You made me a little nervous there, dialing at the last second. It's going, oh, no, do I have to do Joe's report? It's good to have you.
No, here, I was putting out an alert. We just put out an unfavorable price change alert because the market's off about 4 or 5 30-seconds from where some people might have put prices out. So I wish I was doing my job, Dave. I don't have a reason to give you for the drop, but it's just occurred in the last 30 minutes or so.
I say there's no economic data. Well, let's get into that. Let's start off by talking. Well, we talked about today. I see the Dow is up 250. Is that?
Well, it's up 230 now. So it's been up all morning, and it lost, 280 on Friday. So I think the market's just catching back up. That was a big drop on Friday. Buyers are coming in on the dips.
Well, I you know me, Joe, I like listening to podcasts, and this weekend I was listening to a whole bunch of podcasts. One of them is Follow the Money, and it's really interesting as you look at what's going on and where the markets are at. It's fascinating. So, and looking at our own positions, where should we be? Is this time to be in cash? And you look at the market being at all-time highs. We're into the bonds. We follow the bonds with this industry, but it's interesting to see that the market is up 250. And so I think you're right, swinging within a new trading range. But let's talk about last week. Very interesting week last week.
Yeah, we improved 12/32nds overall last week. And, it was just about every day. I saw a little bit of improvement. Starting out with retail sales. Retail sales came out. They were expected to bounce. We'd had 3 months in a row of declining retail sales. This is all ex-auto, by the way. So three months in a row of declining sales, and expected a bounce in March, and we got a little bit of one, but almost not near what was expected. 7/10 growth was expected, and only 4/10 came, and that provided a little boost to MBS prices. Other weaknesses were seen in industrial production. It fell short of expectation. March housing starts and building permits fell short of expectations. First-time jobless claims rose a little bit. But, it's interesting to look. I mean, that's just the initial claims. The continuing claims are down at the lowest level they've been in since 2000. It was kind of good news. Other good news came from this National Association of Home Builders. Their confidence survey jumped a bit. So, even though the starts were low, the confidence is high. So that maybe that bodes well for May building activity. Inflation last week, CPI and PPI, both the core measures showed inflation in March was a little higher than what was expected. And it's been such a non-event of late, it's starting to get a little attention. CPI rose to an annual basis of 1.8%, and that's up from 1.6% just 2 months ago. So we're starting to see a little heat up there. I know that there are other things that are going to put a slowdown on it, like the import prices being low due to the strength of the dollar, and the cost of gasoline is going to work its way through there. But still, an increase from 1.6 to 1.8 in a couple months is a pretty big increase. And then, as you might guess, Dave, Fed speakers are starting to get more and more attention as their policy is uncertain or uncertain based on what they view is happening in the economy. And so last week, it was interesting on Thursday to see Vice Chair Fisher his speech caused the markets to sell off. We lost a little bit of price based on what he had to say. It was a little bit more hawkish than what people had thought of him. And then later in the day, several other Fed speakers came on, and they were a little more dovish than what might have been expected, and things turned right around. So it's going to continue as the Fed's decision as to when to start raising rates continues to be uncertain. Anything that any of the Fed speakers say is going to be of interest to the market.
Well, the minutes from the last FOMC meeting clearly identified that there's quite a divide amongst the various
members.
There
really is.
And so we're going to, every time we see one speaker speak, I would just wish they'd put all the people that are hawkish in one end of the week and then all the doves in the other end of the week, rather than, because it's volatility that they cause. It's just really interesting throughout the week. But it makes for interesting reporting, but you got to have a service to, like MBS Quoteline, to stay on top of it. But interesting that Greece is back up in on the radar again.
Boy, they are a mess. You know, they're going to run out of cash here pretty soon, and the question is what's going to happen. Is the IMF going to provide some leniency, or they've got bills to pay and no cash to pay it with, and it's going to come to a head pretty soon. So the market is, beginning to build in a Greek exit from the euro and or the eurozone and from the euro, and the question is how big an issue is that going to be. In and of itself, it's not that big, but obviously the concern stems from other people following suit, other countries following suit. So that will continue to be in the market now. I mean, there are cash payments due in a couple of weeks. There are more cash payments due in a week or so after that. So it's just going to be one deadline after another that's going to be creating some concerns for the market.
We've already talked about the Dow, so we move on into looking at what this week has. So, I mean, this week, it's going to remain the focus. But it looked like a pretty light economic calendar for the most part, although the focus will be home sales, the topic of our hot topic here.
Well, March existing home sales will be released on Wednesday. The consensus is for an increase from February. The March new home sales will be released on Thursday, and the consensus there is for a decrease from February home sales, new home sales. Durable orders comes out on Friday, and a big improvement there is expected. Being weather related, a few months prior, a rebound's expected there, and we'll see if it fares better than retail sales did.
Very interesting. Very, very interesting to see what we have in the volatility. You just got to have a service like this, especially when you have one hawkish dove, one hawkish Fed member speaking, and then another governor, and then it's just the whipsaw of the market. So you got to have the service. I'm looking at it; it's really starting to head down pretty good right at the moment. It's only 4:30 seconds, so not a huge deal. But again, volatility, good amount of it today, just what we're seeing in the markets. Thank you so much, Joe. Appreciate you. And
sure.
I'm looking forward to your participation, really, when we get Lynn on the conversation, Lynn Fisher with the MBA, Dr. Lynn Fisher. So it'll be good to have your thoughts on that. So sharpen up that pencil, make lots of notes, and we'll go from there. Folks, we're going to be right back with Paul Mallo right after this brief break.
Looking for that competitive edge? MBS Quoteline delivers live market coverage for originators. Get up-to-the-minute mortgage market news and analysis as events occur. Get MBS prices as trades happen. Straight to your computer, email, cell phone, or PDA. Know in advance when your investors will reprice. Make better lock-float decisions and increase your income. Be the expert your clients expect and know what's moving interest rates right now, tomorrow, and beyond. MBS Quoteline, delivering live market coverage for originators. Learn more about MBS Quoteline today at MBSQuoteLine.com. MBSQuoteLine.com. 646-716-4972. The Lincoln on Lending Show is back. Here is your host, David Lincoln.
Good to have you with us. We've got Paul Mallo on the line. Good to have you here, Paul. You were on spring break last week. Hope you had a great spring break family trip somewhere. If you go somewhere fun.
Miami was very nice, but the traffic, man, I haven't been in Miami in years. I was surprised about how much traffic there is.
Really got, Yeah, really. Yeah, we flew there to the islands of the Bahamas. We the Exuma where we went, and I think I shared with you some of the pictures we had. So
sure.
Yeah, it's crazy in Miami. Fly over it and right go right on out to the Bahamas is my recommendation. So anyway, looking at your great website again, I tell everybody dialed into www.imfnews.com. If you're not signed up for the blog, get this an email, daily email. Lots going on, boy. There's a lot to report on right now, especially with all that's going on. So let's go through your headlines. I want to get your updates, especially the quickened ones I want to spend
sure.
a few moments on.
Sure. Yeah, let's start with the VA. I mean, you know, VA is sort of the unreported story. At least our competitors don't seem to be paying much attention or the general business press. I mean, volumes are really going up in Veterans Administration loans. I remember we were watching CNBC one day, and I saw an ad for VA loans from who else but Penny Mac. I mean, it's like suddenly the industry has discovered you can make no down payment mortgages through the VA program. Of course, the catch is you have to be lending to someone who's got military service. It's not like, you know, the credit union membership, which is pretty darn fuzzy these days, and you hear banks complain about that all the time.
Yeah.
But, you know, to make a VA loan, you have to be in service. But, yeah, that's it's fascinating. VA outstandings keep going up. FHA is dropping. And that's a very interesting story to watch. The other big story, the number two today for us, you know, is the story about Quicken suing HUD and DOJ over the alleged allegations that they violated FHA underwriting. I mean, everyone knows, you know, lenders from Chase to SunTrust to whoever have been, you know, sued or threatened to be sued, and they wind up settling, you know, out of court with DOJ and the HUD IG's office over, you know, alleged FHA underwriting violations. But Quicken steps in and says, sorry, guys, you know, we're going to fight the man. And that's what we have here. Well, I have a copy of the lawsuit. It's over 50 pages or 40 pages or whatever. Still reading it. You know, and there's a lot of people who won't go on the record, but they're cheering this on. They're like, you know, bring it on.
Oh, absolutely.
You know? Yeah, and there's a lot of, you know, pro Quicken comments that I've received. No anti-Quicken comments, let me tell you. And they are really happy that Quicken is carrying the water for the industry. You know, last summer with JP Morgan Chase, Jamie Dimon made some comments hinting that, you know, maybe they'll ditch the FHA program. They never did, of course. But, you know, this is very, very interesting. I can't recall the last time a lender of this kind of prominence turned around and sued the government. So this is going to be an interesting one to watch. We also had a follow-up to the PEMER story, which we had out on Friday. PEMER is in the G-fees. Genworth made a disclosure about how much additional capital they're going to need to meet the mortgage eligibility requirements from FHFA. And it's a pretty big number. They also say they're going to meet it, but it's a big number, $500 million to $700 million. They're going to have to do some rejiggering to get there. That's a big story, obviously. Brandon Ivey's got a story about physician loans. This is a story that, you know, I started looking into months ago, not about physicians per se. You know, there's a really big or niche market out there, I should say, not big, about lending to doctors and dentists. And Brandon's got a story there about physician loans, which is part of Tower Mortgage and how they're, you know, changing their underwriting guidelines to make it easier to get no down payment. Payment loans again for doctors and dentists. Also, there's a story out there about one of these, I guess they call marketplace lenders. I don't know if it falls under the rubric of crowdfunding. This is a non-bank that gets investors from the internet and they're lending it out. That looks like they're going to go into the non-QM space. In short takes, we have just a follow-up to the Quicken story. And in that lawsuit, Quicken mentions that over the past 3 years, they've been subpoenaed by DOJ to the tune of 85,000 documents and emails. And, of course, some of their top officers have been tied up in depositions with DOJ. Interesting story. Quicken in itself is interesting. Dan Gilbert, who has run that thing for many years or has owned it for many years, he apparently owns 70 office buildings or buildings, I should say, in Detroit.
Yeah.
Here's a guy who's really
Detroit.
made a big financial bet on the recovery in Detroit.
Yeah, no kidding. I mean, I got quoted in some articles. I got asked my opinion about them, and in the Detroit Free Press or one of the publications or one of the big major newspapers. I can't remember which one it is, but anyway, and he, got a really nice note from him. Thank you. He says I really am bullish, and so he believes in the city. He's obviously done so much there. Nice right. to see him believing in Detroit because a lot of people haven't.
Yeah, no, I got some friends in Ann Arbor, and I haven't been to Detroit in a long time. It was in the airport years ago. One of these days I want to go and see what all this revival is about. And you've heard about them planting corn in the middle of the city. Dan Gilbert buying up properties. He's putting all the Quicken employees in them.
Exactly right. And you look at. Well, Alice is on the line. Alice, you're here with us. You are kind enough to drive me through the streets of Detroit. And, when I was out there, you and I were speaking together at a conference, and we went to one of the games, the baseball games there, and it was really a lot of fun. But it's just amazing to see how that city has been hit. And it really came from government, poor choices of leaders, and there was a big – So it's an interesting thing to study, and I encourage anyone who wants to understand how important it is we pay attention to elected officials and their policies. If you want a lesson in this, go to Detroit. Really dive into it. And if you could get Alice to drive you around, Paul, she will just fill your mind with all the kinds. That was really, really good. So anyway, it's good
well,
to have you on.
The rapidly you, changing rapidly changing nature of the auto industry too had a little bit something
well,
to do with it.
Yeah.
It has a little bit. But
don't
but
forget
again,
that.
Yeah. Well,
go ahead,
look
Alice.
At what went outside of Detroit. But anyway, Alice, chime in on the Detroit story. That's part of the story here.
Yeah, well, Paul, first of all, you're welcome anytime to come to Detroit, and I would be happy to drive you around and give you a tour. And then secondly, yeah, we are big Dan Gilbert fans. I mean, I remember, Rock Financial with Dan before it was Quicken Loans.
Yeah.
He's a brilliant businessman. I've been in that shop, assisting in different ways. And we certainly believe in a lot of good that comes out of that company. So I, too, am very interested and was going to talk about that a little bit on my segment to see, like you said, Paul, it's not easy that you have a large company who you would normally call the Goliath in the battle is now trying to go after a bigger Goliath, right?
Right.
So.
The battles of the Titans. Well, we're going to get right into you, Alice.
Sure.
Paul, I want to say thank you so much for joining in, and again, good to have you back. Look forward to having
Great.
You back
you.
Next week.
All right.
And folks, if you are not, I always enjoy it. If you do not have www.imfnews.com. In your save folder, you got to have it. But more importantly, sign up for the emails. They're really, really good stuff, and we appreciate them. And Paul taking time to be part of the broadcast. Alice, let's get into some of the things that you're doing. Good to have you with us.
Hi, Dave. Yes,
Alice.
Thank you.
Hi. Whoop. Sorry. You know what happened? Al, sorry, I cut your mic off because it was Paul's mic I was killing, and he dropped off, and I muted your mic as you shifted up next to him. So sorry about that.
That's okay.
You're back.
Yes, I am here. So anyway, I just wanted to, I'm glad, Paul, I got a chance to chat about that with Paul because certainly I wanted to just at least give our two cents from the Detroit perspective. I do think it is very much of a challenge for a large lender to think, what are the consequences? I mean, if you think about it, that's a huge decision as a company. If you say, I'm being written up by the DOJ and HUD for various actions within my shop, and I do a lot of things right, we have good policies and procedures, and then there are these, in their opinion, again, I'm not trying to judge one side or the other, but as a company that does good business and is trying to do good, and you say every company has challenges with a certain employee or the occasional loan, at what point do you get anything to be considered for you're doing things very, very well, and you've got some good systems in place. I mean, any shop can try and manage to zero errors, but I don't know if any shop actually successfully does that. We might manage that all the time as Indicom, as we manage, multiple companies, and you try and say, how do you get the company to zero errors or our performance to zero errors? And you know, who's perfect? That's what I want to know. And at what point does it become fines and penalties? So anyway, I'll stop on there because, you know, I'm obviously a Dan Gilbert fan.
Well, it's a soapbox I could, it's a soapbox you and I could stand on and go on and on and on about. I'm one of the ones that are cheering them on. I understand the government. I understand their role, but it just seems like there's been an overreach in so many things. Like you report each and every day. I mean, we messed up as an industry. A lot of people get upset with me when they say, but it wasn't me that did it, but we're all part of the industry. So whether how complicit you were in the previous housing crisis, the fact is many of us were here. And if you didn't speak up, which is the purpose of this broadcast, is to begin to create a mechanism by which we can speak up and garner the voices together to be more proactive. I think when someone does that, like Dan Gilbert and Bill Emerson, I just want to applaud it. I just want to go, it's leadership. It's gutsy leadership, Alice. And it's coming out of Detroit. Well, that's a great place to see some new leadership rising up. Good job to them. I'm all for Dan running for politics, other than he can't seem to keep some really good players on his basketball team. But anyway, that's another topic.
Well, and I think there's a slippery slope, you know, on both sides of this. You know, if you're the lender, are you really putting yourself at risk for, you know, the powers that be being more upset, or are you really going to get some success? And if the government pulls back on anything that it's been writing up or doesn't pull up, so I'm trying to think, so if they don't pull back on anything, you know, as lenders, we'll be watching this very closely. If we have to truly be at zero tolerance for everything going on, especially within FHA lending, if somebody wants to see that credit box tighten up, you go ahead and make this a case where the government wants to dig in their heels and be right. Because that will do nothing but pull the credit box tighter if lenders feel I can't make one mistake or it will cost me an awful lot of money. So I think they need to look at this very closely from that aspect. So I'll get on quickly with my report. One thing I wanted to make sure was I brought up about the Quicken loans. We have been watching two bills for everybody here. So House Bill 650 and then House Bill 685. 650 was around last year, so when QM first came out, they were first trying to get rid of how the points and fees test was going on for brokers, and that got solved. But the piece that's been out there is this affiliate, right? So as you kind of go through the new TRID, one of the dicey points for companies that have a title company and a lender shared ownership is this treatment for the title insurance is different than if it's a non-affiliate. So this bill, this House Bill 650 was the one, I'm sorry, I got to get my numbers right. Yeah, so I'm sorry, 680, the numbers kept switching around. Yeah, 650 was the one that had to change that bona fide third-party charges, even if it was paid to an affiliate, would be excluded from the QM points and fees test. Then the other bill we've talked about was about the manufactured housing, that they're feeling the points and fees squeeze on high-cost loans just because their price points are lower and they want their points and fees threshold moved up to 10%. So there's a House Resolution 189 that's combining these two, and that's now passed the House. So we do see that there might be some movement on changing the affiliate fees in the QM definition. But we'll wait and see, right? Obviously, things change as they move into the Senate. So it was really, from a legislative standpoint, something that got a little bit of movement. And the one thing on the compliance side I want to make sure that everybody's watching is don't forget about the consumer complaint process. So we're left with about 60 days. The clock started in March. It'll be about June 19th, somewhere in that window, CFPB will start publishing or asking borrowers if they want to opt in to have their complaint comments published on the CFPB website. So in that opting in, the customer is going to say, hey, you guys are crazy. You should have given me a modification even though I don't have a job, right? I mean, whatever the customer wants to say is going to get published. And CFPB will scrub it a little bit. But the lender then gets a chance to respond, but that will be a kind of like a boilerplate response. So heads up, TRID, you only have 60 days to try and get a handle on your consumer complaint process with the CFPB. And then, of course, watching, we don't see an extension yet for the FHA new 4001 due to go into effect June 15th. So that's my report, Dave. I know we want to save time for Mike Pratt and Tony. I'm looking forward to talking with him.
Yeah, unfortunately, Mike can't be on. You were joining late because I know you were just getting out. We've got Dr. Lynn Fisher sitting in. And she specializes. She's with the MBA and is a head of research in economics. And very excited to talk to her because she's the expert
on housing within there. Mike knows that obviously well, but so we're very, very fortunate to have Dr. Lynn Fisher with us. So very excited to have her. But you weren't on the first part of the broadcast. You were dialing in. I knew you were traveling, but thank you so much for taking time. You are one busy person flying around the country, Alice, and taking the time to dive in and share the wisdom and insights of what's going on is always, always appreciated. So, folks, we're going to be right back with, we got Sam Garcia on the line. I see Sam's there still. I want to make sure we get him on. Then we're going to get on with Dr. Lynn Fisher. We'll be right back after this brief break.
If you have questions about mortgage regulations, Indicom Mortgage U has free answers. If you need ideas about how to reinvent your organization, Indicom Mortgage U will share great ideas. When you need help at any step of the loan process, give us a call or send an email. The Indicom team of experts have been helping mortgage players from origination through servicing for over 30 years. Your success is our focus. Whether it's a quick question or long-term support, portfolio, conventional, or government lending, it's a competitive market. So let Indicom Mortgage U give you the edge.
That's the voice of Andy Alvey, Alice's son. He does such a good job with our ads. Appreciate him so much. Greetings, Andy. Thank you so much for what you do. All right, let's get Sam Garcia on. You're dialing in. You're out in L.A. out there. You got tired of the weather here, decided to go out west. Hopefully it's just a temporary move, Sam.
Yeah, well, I brought a few glasses of water to help the folks out here, if you know what I mean. A little bit of a drought going on.
So is that a way to go into Southern California? You've got to bring a gallon of water to contribute to their shortage. That's so funny.
Hey, it's something, right? It's something. All the grass is all dyed out here. It's not quite as green as it had been in the past.
That's sad. It's really sad. We were late here in Texas, but let's talk a little bit about some of the headlines you've got going on, folks. I want to make sure call your attention to it. www.mortgagedaily.com. Great information. And Sam is kind enough to join us to reach Sam 214-521-1300. Sam, what you got for us today?
Well, Fannie Mae put out its outlook today, its forecast, which it puts out each month. And Basically, Fannie's has originations for this year coming in at $1.3 trillion. They boosted it from $1.2 trillion, which was predicted last month. And next year's outlook was also increased to $1.231 trillion from $1.206 trillion. And both refinances and purchase financing were both boosted as far as the forecast for both of them. So, very positive news about where we're heading this year and next year. And in fact, last week we saw that our mortgage market index, which we published based on data from Optimal Blue, it was up 9%. And out front of that activity was jumbo inquiries and refinance activity. So we saw that kind of a boost really across the board, but those two categories were up the most. We got some data from the Conference of State Bank Supervisors. And it actually had some origination data for non-bank originators. And what we found is that California has the highest originations last year, and that was followed by Texas and then Florida. And the two that really surprised me were Virginia and Colorado were the fourth and fifth for volume last year on mortgage originations. That was kind of interesting. We saw that the foreclosure report came out last week from RealtyTrack, and U.S., all the metrics were worse. New foreclosure filings were worse. We saw that the foreclosure rate got worse, and the number of completed foreclosures got worse, though RealtyTrack suggested that really that's just some cleaning out and getting some activity from stuff that was already in process. But it didn't look good from a number standpoint when it comes to foreclosures last month.
Especially with a loosening of credit that's being talked about by Julian Castro and Vice President Biden. That's just, anyway, it's a little troublesome to see. We'll get Lynn's comments on that in a little bit here. You started saying something else. I'm sorry I interrupted you.
Well, no, along those lines of what you just mentioned, you know, we always can look back to the Mortgage Bankers Association has that credit availability index. And, I mean, you know, I don't remember what the number was, but it's somewhere in the 100s versus it was close to 800 in 2006. So whether or not credit has gotten loose, it's nowhere near where it was pre-crisis. Loan modification activity slowed. We got the data from Hope Now that indicated loan modifications fell in February compared to January. And so we see that that activity continues to slow, which is, should be a good indication that, you know, people don't need modifications or don't qualify because they're not upside down necessarily. Finally, there was a survey put out, reported last week by Capsilon, and they basically surveyed executives at the recent Mortgage Bankers Association conference. And that survey found that 41% of the people they surveyed said they aren't prepared for the new integrated disclosures. And
ooh,
of course, that goes
into
effect on August 1st. So
that's what Alice has been saying. We've been talking about. We're just really concerned about people just saying, "Well, I've got that in the hands of my vendor. I hope they're good. I hope they got it together." Oh gosh. Anyway,
yeah, exactly.
We wonder why we have.
One thing I wanted to add to the Quicken conversation was that I read that complaint this morning, and they were saying that based on FHA's own data that's been reported, that Quicken has like the lowest default rates. So it's like, what are you doing? You know, right along the lines of what you were saying earlier.
Go take on one of the top lenders. It makes no sense. Well, I appreciate you dialing in, especially when you're out there in L.A. Or the Southern California market and visiting out there, carrying some water to them. That's hilarious, Sam. Appreciate you, man. You have yourself a good trip and look forward to having you back at good old warm Texas here. Starting to warm up here. It's a beautiful weekend, man.
Thanks for having me on the show, David.
Always a pleasure, Sam. Blessings to you. Well, we're going to get right over to our special guest. I'm very excited to have with us today Lynn Fisher from the MBA, Dr. Lynn Fisher. She is Vice President of Research and Economics for the Mortgage Bankers Association of America. And in this role, she is responsible for managing the MBA's economic and mortgage origination forecasts. Can't wait to hear about that. Developing analysis on issues important to the mortgage industry. Prior to being with the MBA, she served on the faculty at, Lynn, you're going to have to come on and pronounce that right so I don't blow that up. Terrible at that. I'll tell you about that sometime. As also, that's located at the University of North Carolina. And then also, you got your PhD at one of my favorite places, Penn State. And Jack Guttentag is one of my dear, dear friends. And I just had dinner with he and his wife at Wharton there. So it's so good to have you with us.
Really excited to be on board. Thanks for having me.
Okay, so let's get the right. You taught at, how do you say, Keenan?
It's the Keenan Flagler Business School at UNC.
Yep, at UNC. Great school. I love UNC. I love the basketball team there. So much to talk about, but we have the time. I just want to say, first of all, thank you so much for stepping in when Mike had a personal emergency. For those of you that did not listen to the early part of the broadcast, Mike Frantoni was scheduled to be with us and give us an update. And he wrote me Sunday, said, Dave, I got to cancel. I've got a family emergency, but I'm not leaving high and dry. I'm having Dr. Lynn Fisher step in. So, Lynn, thank you so much for taking the time to dial and be with us. And then I was really excited as I read over your bio that's on the MBA website. And, folks, I encourage you to go out and read her full bio. Very interesting background. And then really on home ownership and housing affordability, this is really where I wanted to go with our broadcast anyway, Lynn. So it's, you know, I hate to see the reason Mike couldn't be with us, but I'm really so honored to meet you and really fortunate to have you here to talk about something that you really keep your eyes on. We could talk about Greece. That's what Mike would have gotten into, talked about all the other things. But let's really get into this. First of all, let people get to know you a little bit. If you could cover some of your background so people just have a sense of connecting with you and really what gets you excited about what you're doing there at the MBA.
Oh, well, thanks so much for that introduction. I just came on board with MBA back in October and really have just been immersing myself in the data here and all the great survey and all the great work that they do. Before that, as you mentioned, I was at UNC. I was at MIT before that and have really focused a lot of my research on decision-making that households make with respect to their jobs and where they're going to live. I've looked at housing affordability, especially up in New England, where you know, there's a lot of regulations about how much housing can be developed and what types can be developed. And so this is a really interesting time. It's been really frustrating because of the long play out of the recession. But, you know, now we get to try to figure out where we go from here.
Well, I mean, for those of you,
I have everyone, all our guests dial in early, so I hit the chance to just talk to them a little bit. And I said, how much of this has become science or guessing? And, you know, it's always fun to hear someone with a PhD say, well, it's science, definitely. We're looking at things statistically, but it's becoming more guessing. And I can begin to understand, because we've never been where we're at in the past as far as it relates to economics. And explain for our listeners that may not understand where we're at. It's the Fed intervention. You look at monetary policy, where we're at. I mean, we just have never seen anything quite like this. But bring our listeners up to date on the macro picture of where we're at, Lynn.
Well, on the housing side, I think the number that always stands out to me is sort of showing us just where we are. Our housing starts, I mean, our normal number of housing starts in a year is over 1 million. And we've been, you know, hanging out around 600,000 a year or less for the last 4 or 5 years. We're still only forecasting, you know, 700 and some for this year, 850 for next year, still well below long-run average. And it just, it's been a very slow unraveling of this recessionary period to get us back to a point where people are willing to buy homes and we're going to be able to start building new ones.
It was our interesting article published last week, I think it was last week, maybe the week before, that Nick Timbrose published about this housing recovery, and it has really been a sluggish recovery. We had Nick Logan Motoshami on talking about some of the stuff and how he's been challenging with questions, more of the Socratic questioning of things that's being put out by some of the economists. And he really made some really, really good points. And I think you and I were talking just before the broadcast about household formation. That's probably one of the most alarming, probably not the right word, but probably one of the most insightful statistics, because we're seeing such a delay in household formation.
That's right. I mean, household formation, the rate of household formation has been well below that of population growth for the last number of years, 4 or 5 years. And so households have been doubling up, right? They've acquired roommates. Kids have moved back into the basements. We've all made all the requisite jokes about that. But just last year, we saw a lot greater household formation than we'd seen in the past, and they were renters. So if you think about this in stages, you know, there was this beginning of household growth. You know, consumer optimism was up. We're starting to see some firming in wages. The unemployment rate was down. And lo and behold, households started to form. You know, I think 1.7 million new households last year. So what we're really holding our breath for, and obviously for all of the housing forecasts we do, we're waiting to see, for example, how Q1 looks. You know, did new households continue to form? And I think it's going to play out in stages. We're going to get new renter households first. We did see in the fourth quarter that there was a net gain in owner-occupied households, but we're probably going to gain more on the renter side for a while. And then, you know, behind that's going to come a wave of new owner-occupiers.
And why do you think that is? I mean, why is it the rental market is, for the millennials particularly, that's the preferred way to go? Versus stepping up, buying a home, even if they're not forming a household per se, getting married and mating and having kids. But I mean, what is the contributing factor there, do you think? Your studies.
I think a lot about getting the right fit in the job market, for one thing, right? This has been a long drawn out recession. Mm-hmm. A lot of people took jobs just to have a job. Certainly, you know, when I was teaching MBAs at UNC, you know, in 2010, 2011, 2012, you took a job and you took whichever one you could find. Then you hope to move into that next job, that better job, the job that fits you better or matched your dreams or what have you. And so people still have to work all of that out. They still have to get into the right job, get comfortable they're going to be in a location for a while. You know, that means they're going to be confident in their income stream and that they want to stay put, because you don't buy a home until you're reasonably sure you're going to be there for a little bit. So, you know, as households get confidence, then they become able to become homeowners.
Someone just shot me a text, one of our listeners, and said, Dave, define household formation for me. What does that look like? What does that mean?
Well, it's literally the number of households we have in the U.S. relative to the population. So if you flip that over, you can think of the number of people per household, right? So if we have you know, 3 or 4 people living in a household versus in good times, you know, those 4 people might divide up and be 2 two-person households. What are we thinking about here? So 1 million new households a year, 1 to 1.2 is kind of normal growth that keeps up with population growth. And it's been, you know, well below that on and off for the last couple of years. So we think upwards of 1.2 to 1.4 million on and off over the next couple of years is not at all unlikely, right, as people get confident about their wages and move out into their own.
I think that's really the key. People are taking jobs that they didn't necessarily go to school for or that they were educated to do, and they are now in a place where I've settled. I took a job as a placeholder until I can get to where I want to go. So I think that really contributes to that, and that's the point that Logan was making, and I really think there's a lot to that. Let's get into some of the statistics or the predictions. You guys, Mike said that he'd be able to release, or that he's got some new updates, or not. He's not going to give us everything. I'm not asking you to give everything that you're going to give at the NBA, the secondary conference, but give us some insights, because he said there's some new data that you're just releasing today, if I understood him correctly.
That's right. We have our new originations, our new economic forecast for April is being released today. And I heard mentioned a moment ago, you know, Fannie Mae's origination numbers are out, and it sounds like we're just a bit under Fannie Mae and our forecast for originations for this year. Our total originations are at about $1.24 billion for the year. I think Fannie was at $1.3, and for next year we're at $1.17. So a slight back off next year to reflect the fact that at some point some of this refi volume is going to go away, right, as interest rates start going up. And we've already seen refis start ticking down a little bit, right? We're still under a 4% interest rate.
Yes.
But, it's ebbing and flowing a little bit because there's just not that many people who can benefit from, you know, the interest rate reduction.
Well, we're starting to see, you know, home appreciation happen. So more people from that standpoint, I mean, they're lifted out of negative equity into positive equity position, we're going to see more of that. But there's a general sense that most of those that have taken advantage of, or could take advantage of it, have. Is that what you guys are seeing, your research is turning up?
That's definitely what it looks like. I don't have a specific statistic in front of me, but when you look at kind of the secondary market and where all the coupons are, there's just not that many people left who can benefit from going lower. But, you know, something you said a moment ago just is a good point. Everyone focuses on how many people have negative equity in their homes, you know, and how that relates to the ability to move or, you know, sell your house and get into the next one. You know, even when people have, you know, 10% equity in their home, they're going to need 10, 15, 20% to get into that next new home that they want. And so even if they're
exactly
in positive
right.
territory, you know, they haven't gained 20% or 15% on their home in the last couple of years.
Where a move-up is really practical at that point. That's really a good point.
You have to have a down payment.
What about GDP? What do you guys see for GDP and the overall? Let's run through some of those numbers. Then I want to go to Joe Farr and invite him into it, and Alice as well. So I'll go to Joe after. Let's go through some of the numbers that you guys are updating your statistics. I got my pen here. I'm going to write them all down.
Well, I think the big thing is that, you know, as the first quarter, and you guys talked about it earlier, as those first quarter numbers came in, we've ticked down our expectation about first quarter GDP to 1.4%. I've seen there's a lot of variance if you look at people's estimates on that, but we're pretty comfortable with 1.4. Overall for the year, we still think we're at 2.5% growth in GDP for 2015. So, you know, steady growth. This isn't explosive stuff, but steady growth. And what else you want to take a look at? I mean, unemployment rate, you know, even though people were very worried about the tick down in the job creation in March, right, we've been creating 200,000 new jobs a month for the last 13 months, so then March came in under that, 126,000. Even though that happened, we still held even on unemployment rate, right? Unemployment's still at 5.5.
Yeah.
That's remained steady.
One statistic that, and Joe, I'm coming to you, I promise, right after this question, I'll go to you. But the question I have is, if we're seeing job growth, but is the income growth? We saw last month that tick up just slightly on the income growth, which was encouraging. But you guys obviously have so many more indicators that you're tracking than I get a chance to look at. What are you seeing for income growth in addition to or beyond job growth?
Right. So I think fourth quarter we saw real income or real wage compensation growth. So if we look at the Employment Compensation Index, that actually ticked up in the fourth quarter of 2014, and we won't get to see that for the first quarter, I think, until the end of the month. So I'll really be looking and keen in on that number. Some of the other leading indicators that we look at suggest there's a lot of pressure in the market, you know, that the labor market is tightening. For example, yeah. Job openings have continued to tick up. People are voluntarily quitting their jobs to go out and take other jobs. That's another sign of confidence, and you know, they must be chasing better wages if they're willing to do that. And in fact, we think those things have been increasing. You know, job openings and quits have been increasing faster than employers can hire right now. So it could be there's just a little bit of stickiness in the market.
Yeah, that's very good. Joe turned me on to the JOLTS report and the Job Opening and Labor Turnover Survey. Very, very comprehensive, very interesting report. And Janet Yellen looks at it, so whatever she's looking at, that's what I'm going to look at. Joe, I'm going to flip it over to you and then invite Allison after that. Joe?
Lynn, I wanted to see if you have studied and can give us some thoughts on the elasticity of home purchases and interest rates, meaning how far, I don't know how high your expect rates to be at the end of the year, but how high can they go without having a big negative effect on purchases?
Great question.
Well, by the end of the year, just so you know, we're now saying interest rates are going to be at about, for the 30-year fixed rate mortgage, just about 4.4%. We're looking for the Fed to start hiking rates around September. I think everybody got a little nervous with the jobs report, so we pushed that out to September. Here's the thing. If interest rates are going up, it's because the other indicators about economic health are doing well. The employment continues to grow, that wages are coming up. Hopefully inflation is coming up as a function of wages starting to grow. And so we think there's a good bit of room to maneuver here. You know, 4.4 is not that high an interest rate by historic standards. Mm-hmm. And you know, we're saying 5.3 by the end of next year. So we do not see that right now as a big headwind to the mortgage market. I think, again, the most important thing is the population's aging just enough. They're in the prime age to get out there and start buying and become homeowners. I think first-time home buyers are going to have a shot at getting into some homes. And if the economy is doing better, then I think we can tolerate this kind of interest rate growth.
I wanted to echo something you zero in. Is there a threshold? Do you have a sense for the threshold of where those headwinds start actually buffeting the progress we're making? Any sense? Is it something north of 5 where you sense that? Even that's ridiculous. I've been in this business for 42 years, Lynn. I know Stevens and I are pretty close this time. I'm a little older than him, but I mean, the reality is we've been around for a long, long time. And 5%, 6% still sounds ridiculously low. But in light of current economic data, that's a great question. Where is that threshold point? Do you have any sense of that?
Yeah, I really don't have a magic number in mind. I used to laugh and say 4% was the magic number for refinancing, right? Mm-hmm. Every time we tick below 4%, yeah, we see this boom. I don't have that magic number. I just want to see wage growth matching that interest rate growth. And as long as that's happening, I don't have a
that's
magic
a good point,
threshold.
How many of us took out a 14.5% loan in the mid-80s?
I did, fortunately. Yeah. Good question.
No, I think my first-time home buyer mortgage was 7%. So.
Oh, yeah. That's an interesting world. Joe, anything else that you got for Lynn before I flip over to Alice?
No, go ahead and go to Alice.
Alice, good to have you
Hi.
Here and listening in on this. What questions do you have for Lynn that you think our listeners would like to know about all that she's watching and surveying?
Oh, well, I have a couple, actually, but I'll just say my first-time home buyer rate for the first house, my husband and I had to buy on land contract, which is kind of unique to our area, and it was 11%, you know, back in the days where someone could have a mortgage and still give, seller financing. So that's dating myself now. But anyway, I had two questions, Lynn. The first one, we've talked a lot about credit loosening and tightening, and so I just wanted to get your thoughts and what's the MBA's position on should credit loosen or tighten, and what is the potential impact on that economically? And then my second question, just so I can let you kind of segue, is, you know, with all of this going on, what do you see as servicing values? You know, we and loan performance seems to be improving, or definitely has been improving, and, you know, how is that going to be impacting things moving forward as a lot of companies are trying to retain servicing and use that as a hedge?
Right. Well, on credit availability, we have seen some modest increases the last few months, I think largely from the uptake of, on the conforming side, we've seen some slight expansion from the uptake of the 97 LTV program. So that's, you know, Fannie introduced their programs in December, and Freddie here just a few weeks ago in March. So there's been some very modest upticks and credit availability there. I would say, and this is relevant to some of your comments earlier about points and fees and other things, you know, the real interesting part looking at our mortgage applications is there's not been an increase yet, kind of in a year-over-year basis, in the smallest loan balance sizes. So think loans around the $150,000 range. Very, very little activity in that part of the market. Most of the credit availability increases over the last year to 2 years has really been from the jumbo end of the market. So, you know, some activity at the high end, very little activity, it appears, at the low loan balance end of the market. And that's concerning. You know, when you ask me about impacts of that, I worry about that for the first-time home buyer market. And it's most likely a little bit of the demand side, right? The folks haven't gotten the wages that they're comfortable with to go out and make the purchases yet. But it also appears to be, you know, some supply side, that it costs more and more to originate a loan. And it's harder and harder, you know, to charge enough when you have caps on points and fees and other things at those really small loan balance buckets in order to originate those loans. I'm probably not as much the expert on the servicing side, but certainly, you know, cost of servicing have continued to go up. The cost of servicing a defaulted loan, I think we estimate in the fourth quarter of 2014 was on the it was about $2,300 to service a defaulted loan, whereas it's like $150 to service a performing loan. And so as long as that, you know, that just remains a huge disincentive to stretch into the credit box a little bit further. And so I think that's, you know, that's something we're going to have to keep an eye on to see if volume doesn't help us with some of those numbers. But there's just a lot of full-time employees that everyone's had to bring on board in order to remain compliant.
Do you look at what HUD's doing and with this, it's troubling to me to see that the potential of this, and yet I wonder if I'm not overreacting to any hint of going back to yesterday where we're seeing credit standards. I believe it was Sam Garcia made reference to an MBA's credit index. Do you have any sense of where that's at?
Is? Well, it's kind of a rubber number because it's a, you know, it's an index level, but it's at 121 right now. So for March, and again, at the height of the market, it was about 880. And so one's arguing that we should go back there, but I think it's quite credible to make the claim that the pendulum swung too far. You know, you can look at the specific terms of loans, but I think you also have to be or sort of pay attention to the incentives of lenders to stay within, you know, their peer groups, to not have too many delinquencies. You know, you have to stay keep your pricing within 150 basis points of the APOR. So there's a lot of things, I think, that are kind of keeping lenders together in a tight area of the credit box.
I'm looking at where this time just flies by every time we get in one of these interviews. What's the one statistic that you think that the MBAs, that you're looking at, you think is really important that our listeners really zero in on as we go in to the next quarter, the next month, and, you know, the next quarter, 6 months out?
The one statistic I'm going to be watching? About two? I really, really want to see
two. I'll take two.
two of them. First quarter household formation. and first quarter employment compensation, the employment compensation index. I really want to see where those two numbers are. Our sense, again, is that the labor market's tightening, that wage growth is coming, but we're still waiting for that moment when it starts to move.
What a joy to have you on the broadcast. Thank you so much. We're gonna. That's great. I appreciate that answer. I agree with you. I think it's really where we're zeroing in on what's going to be the future of this industry, and it all trickles out from there. When we see interest rates going up, by how much, when, all that. Just real interesting. You do a great job. We're so pleased with our relationship with the NBA, and I just can't champion enough, Lynn, what you're doing there and what everyone's doing there. Kudos to David Stevens, Mike Frattantoni, the whole group from top to bottom. We're going to have on next week, really looking forward to having on Jeff Schumacher, and talking about one of my favorite topics about bringing the next generation into our industry. So that'll be a good discussion. So we've got several. We had Ken on, Markeson on from the legal side. Now we have you on the economic side. And thank you so much for stepping in on such short notice. And Mike had to step away from the mic. So very much.
You're very welcome.
Folks, we have had Dr. Lynn Fisher on, who's Vice President of Research and Economics at the Mortgage Bankers Association. We appreciate her being a part of the broadcast. Appreciate you telling others about the broadcast, tuning in, folks, and sharing it with others. It's a great way. Go to the website, lickitonlending.com. It'll get you to all the broadcasts going back some years, Alice. Gosh, Joe, it's been forever, it seems like. But we love doing this. It's our way of giving back to the industry, and we appreciate you telling others about it so they too can benefit from this. And also love to hear from you about programs, that content that you would like for us to put on here. Have a great week, everybody. Get tuned in next week. Jeff Schumacher will be on. I'm really on a topic that's near and dear to me, partly because I have a 23-year-old daughter I'd love to see into the industry. But we'll have him on talking about what we can do to attract the next generation into our industry. Have a great week, everybody. See you back here next week.
This has been Lickin' on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update with your host, David Lickin of Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level. Today's guests were Joe Farr from MBS Quoteline, Andy Schell of Mortgage Banking Solutions, and Alice Alvey, President CMB of Mortgage U. Come by next week and thank you for listening.